Life happens fast. Be financially ready. Call Mesiro, 877-MESIROW. Here with Noah Block from Mesiro. Noah, welcome to WGN. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, John.
You've been with Mesiro. It's your only job you've ever had. I love that.
That's right. That's right. I've been here 8 years. It's all I know.
And you are a financial planner like everyone else we chat with here?
Yeah, my financial advisor, based out of Highland Park.
Why do you love doing this so much?
I like meeting new people, talking with clients, learning about their lives, and helping them achieve their goals.
Right, because your job is to essentially help them get to the finish line and beyond, right? And to plan their legacy. I mean, really, at Mesiro, you guys kind of do a holistic approach to all things financials, right?
That's right, from beginning to end.
That's nice. Yeah. We're going to talk a little bit about renting versus buying, which I feel like if you own a house, you're on the side of, obviously, you bought, and you're like, there's no other way possible. I've talked to renters who have rented for 15 or 20 years who say, this is the only way I ever want to do that. It's a kind of divisive issue in the country, isn't it?
I think especially right now, it's a hot topic. But yes, the people that are buyers are always buyers, and the people that are renters tend to stay that way.
Let's go through some of the basics, the advantages of renting versus buying. Let's just start about like what you have to do on the way in, the advantages or disadvantages of both those things. Walk us through it.
Yeah, I think with renting to start is easiest. It's the lowest, you know, upfront cost. You got to put your security deposit down, which is maybe, you know, a month or two of rent. And then you have your ongoing rental costs. And that's about it. So if your rent is $2,000, what you have to pay up front is about $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
Buying a home is a little different. You need the down payment, usually about 20% in today's market. Sometimes higher for competitive, homes. And then you've got property taxes that come up. You've got maintenance costs, potentially closing costs. So your upfront cost could be a lot higher.
I mean, tens and thousands of dollars, if not more.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. If we're talking a $750,000 home, that could be $150,000, $200,000 that you need, you know, upfront versus rent of $2,000.
Okay. So upfront renting, we'll get a little check mark, a ding right there. Buying maybe a little bit more cumbersome. What about as you get going, right? In the natural rhythm of things, of living in a place.
Yeah, I think sometimes people forget that with rent, you know, rents have increased a lot over time. And right now we're seeing rent increases. So it's not necessarily something that stays steady, right?
Right.
Rent could be $2,000 and then the next year, $2,400 because your landlord comes in and tells you costs are higher and I'm you know, giving you the burden. So That's one of the variables with renting is it can go up.
Whereas, and it can go up fairly quick. I mean, not
absolutely.
Always, but it adds up year after year. I mean, you add $50, $100 a month per rent. Pretty soon you're paying 50% higher than you were if you stay there for 5 or 6 years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It adds up quick to your point. And with buying, you know, it's usually most people choose a mortgage that's fixed. And so your actual cost of owning the home from that standpoint can be steady and the same for 30 years, if that's the length of the mortgage. Other aspects might change, like how much you're putting into it. It could be a money pit, but
right.
For the most part, the actual cost that you're borrowing from is fixed.
Right. Your homeowner's insurance may go up and your taxes go up, but your P&I, the principal and interest, for most people, remains the same.
Right.
And that's huge because if your mortgage is $2,500 a month in the year 2020, going back a few, and it's $2,000 a month in the year 2050, the purchasing power has gone up exponentially for those $2,000, or going down, excuse me, for those $2,000.
That's right. That's right. And you kind of benefit from that because you're also building equity. That's the other piece that renting doesn't allow you to do. So, again, people are on both sides of this debate, but there's pros and cons to each.
Well, let's say that monthly expenses, we go ding for the owning, although maybe not so clear. Maybe it's a draw because, as you mentioned, things break all the time
right.
as you move on.
Right.
Let's talk about ongoing responsibilities. That's something to consider too, right?
I think that's probably the biggest differentiator. Besides the upfront cost and how that can differentiate, I think that might be the biggest one. The renting, you pretty much know it's all on the landlord. You know, you may have a little thing here or there. And the rent increase, but you're locked into what your agreement is.
Mm-hmm.
Buying, who knows, right? You know, you could need a new washer and dryer. You could need a new roof. You could have all these maintenance expenses that are unforeseen that we really need to plan for. And that's something we really talk to clients about is, it's not just giving the money up front. It's making sure you have enough for those unforeseen things in the future, too.
It's a double-edged sword, though. You put money back into your house. Maybe you don't get the ROI of 100% on a lot of these things, but they do improve the value of your house, or at least keep up with the value of the homes around you. There is a benefit to putting into your own home, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The benefit is there. It's just not always on your own time and your own terms. So, no, absolutely. You're investing in yourself and your own home.
I think that there is often muddied numbers when people talk about renting versus buying. For one, some buyers say, hey, I bought my house for $500,000. I'm going to sell it, or it's worth, you know, $1.2 million in 30 years. Look at that. But without realizing and recognizing that, of course, you may have bought the house for $500,000, but if you add up all your payments,
right,
it's probably about $1.2
million. Right.
I think sometimes people like to gloss over that fact.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think with clients, we preach that a home is first and foremost, especially a primary residence, is first and foremost a utility. It's something you use every day. You need a roof over your head. It's comfort for your family. And it's investment secondary, because you can't just turn it into cash tomorrow. You know, and so you need to put all these improvements into it to make it more comfortable, to enjoy it, to live in it. And if it goes up in value over time, great. But you've also gotten all the value that you can't put a dollar amount of enjoying it and living there and feeling safe.
That's what I think homeowners gloss over sometimes. What renters, I feel like, gloss over is they say, yeah, but I didn't have to pay for when they fixed the toilet. I didn't have to pay when they fixed the laundry machine. But if you rented for 30 years at $2,500 a month, slash not really, it's going to go up every year in theory. At the end of that 30 years, if the landlord says bye-bye, you are leaving there and you have earned absolutely nothing.
Right. Right. Renters, you know, some people are like, I'm done throwing money at nothing. And that's usually when they're ready to start considering buying.
So how do you have that conversation with folks if they're kind of curious? Maybe people around your age, you're 30-ish. Mm-hmm. I won't tell your exact age. It's 30. what do you tell people? Is it really an individual decision that you need to open up the books and see what's under the hood?
I think it really is an individual decision. It's looking at the numbers. And again, like I said before, it's also looking at, you know, emotionally, is that what you want? Do you want to have a place that you call your own? Do you want to have a place that, you know, feels like you're not throwing money away? So the two of those combined are usually, you know, what we talk about with clients is, are you ready financially and are you ready emotionally to be a home buyer?
I think the financial aspect is hard to sometimes break down, mm-hmm. because we look at this big house and the, or not big house, but the price of a house is a big number. You really got to kind of look at how much money you're bringing in and how much you're spending. How do you walk people through those ratios? I mean, what's like the ideal percentages that you look at and advise for people?
Sure. There's two main percentages. One is, and I just throw out the 28%. So okay. 28% means that less than, hopefully, less than 28% of your gross income should
be spent. And what does gross income mean again?
Think of it what your salary is.
Okay.
So if your monthly salary is $10,000,
okay,
before taxes, before all that stuff that comes out, just gross. So the full thing, you know, if it's $10,000, you want less than 28% of that being spent on your home. So that'd be $2,800.
And that's including the insurance you're paying on it, everything that has to do with that house.
That is. That is. And most lenders, so the banks or mortgage lenders, are looking at those numbers with you because they don't want to lend somebody's money who is spending 50% of their gross salary on their home, because that's a liability to the bank. So they're kind of not on your side, but helping you make the right decision as well. So these ratios, they apply as well.
28%. I think a lot of people, whether they are renting or buying, are spending more than 28% of their income on their homes.
I think so. I think with rents going up and with home prices and interest rates right now, I think we're definitely seeing that. Again, this is not a end-all be-all. It's kind of a by-the-book number. And if it means for a period of time you're over that because you know, hopefully your salary will increase, that's okay. But that's kind of the barometer we try to tell clients to stay under.
Noah, can you see me trying to crunch the numbers in my head and having a hard time talking and doing that at the same time?
I can't.
Yeah, right, because I'm kind of looking up. And,
it's relatively low.
Yeah, I'll have to bust out my calculator here afterwards.
Yeah.
Talk about income to how much debt you want to take on. That's another part of the equation, right?
Yeah, the other one is, you know, you want all of your liabilities. So whether that's your rent or your mortgage or student loans, credit card debt, car loans, all of that combined, we want that to be less than 36%. So not adding much more to that 28% for the rest of your liabilities.
Well, and so that's a great point, because someone might be like, well, I'm well under the 28%. I'm able to buy a house, but they've got three car payments. They've got student loan debt. And really, they'd be taking on 50% debt to income. You have to put those numbers both in play.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, lenders are going to look at that, because it's not just about the home. They're looking at you as a person. How much are you, you know, in debt? What is the risk to the bank or to the lender to give you money to buy this home? So
one thing about the money you would need for a down payment, I feel like you got to have a little buffer too. When you move in, if the furnace breaks the first day, you still need to heat your house.
You absolutely need a buffer. And I kind of alluded to it before, but in today's really competitive housing market, you also may need to put a little bit more down to get to win the bidding process. So 20% today's market is probably a little bit low too.
What do you think about buying an investment property?
You know, I think
deep breath right beforehand.
I think at my team and at Mesra, we talk about, again, homes more as utilities, and there's other ways to have an investment that's maybe more liquid, that could be more fruitful. So, you know, for certain clients who may have a higher net worth where their liquid investments are enough to cover their needs for the foreseeable future, I think it's, you know, a suitable idea. But, you know, for the most part, again, we lean to the side on the conservative side that homes are really for use and less for investment.
But when I go on Instagram, there's a million people telling me to chain link a bunch of properties one on top of the other, that I've got the equity in my one house. Mm-hmm. Why don't I buy a rental property, rent that out, and I'm going to then use the equity of both these homes to buy a third and a fourth one.
Yeah.
Seems really easy on Instagram, Noah.
It does. It does seem really easy. I see those same videos.
Yeah.
And I think they underplay it, that's a full-time job to have four or five properties, manage those properties, make sure they're, you know, getting updated, have those maintenance costs built in that they don't really talk about in those videos. So for some it can work, but it's really a time-consuming thing to do, is have all these properties, manage them, take care of them, and listen to potential buyers to sell them eventually.
What about people that want to buy a vacation place?
Yeah.
I imagine talking through that, because that's something maybe in the middle, right? You get some utility out of it if you're going to use it. And I guess it depends if it's a cabin in Wisconsin you're going to go to every weekend, or a condo or a home in Arizona you're going to go for 3 weeks out of the year.
Yeah.
Walk us through kind of what you talked about with snowbirds.
Yeah, snowbirds, you know, are people that, usually those are people that just retired. So, you know, they're starting a new phase of life and have an idea that they want to get out of the freezing cold Chicago 6 months of the year.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I would do that. And so usually we talk to them about renting first. And I think that it's really more so, do you know that the place you want to live? Do you know the location well enough? Are there neighborhoods you want to try out? And so we usually recommend renting for 2 weeks here and there, maybe even in the same city, but in different neighborhoods, to see if that's, you know, which one they like better. And that just doesn't lock you in to that home purchase right away that we talked about having really high upfront costs. So you kind of get to do a little trial period of testing out different places, different states, different communities, different climates, and seeing what fits you best. So usually that's our first recommendation to
rent to that place first.
Yes, absolutely.
And maybe if you're going to go do one of these things where you go for a month, a year or something, do that once via the rental or twice, mm-hmm. to see if it's something you really actually want to do, if that lifestyle of being away from the grandkids for that month,
exactly.
is something you really want to do. Because there's got to be that personal aspect of things too, right?
Exactly. You know, is there a community there that you, you know, become friends with? Or what are you leaving behind that you're... Are you sure you're willing to commit to leaving that up behind for 6 months? So I think it gives everyone flexibility in that first situation. And then if it's a place you like, then you can consider, you know, a second home or, you know, an investment property that you share with somebody to use once a year.
Right. I think that the second home idea always sounds great. And for some people, it works great. And that's wonderful. I don't know why, though. I think that when we think of a vacation home, we forget it comes with the same baggage that your own house did.
It does.
It comes with all the same taxes. It comes with all the same insurances rising, especially in certain states. Mm-hmm. Florida, boy, you better consider your homeowner's insurance, depending Absolutely. On where you are. But it also comes with, like, you're going to be paying utilities on a place you're not at.
Exactly, exactly. And, the Florida situation, knock on wood, but, you know, do you have a plan in place if you're in Chicago and a hurricane's coming? You know, what do you do? Do you have somebody that can come do the necessary precautions? So to your point, there's a lot to think about. We have a lot of clients, not all, but a lot of clients who get two homes and then go back to having one in this new place because they're happy there, and taking care of two is just too much of a burden, especially as you get older. So we see both sides. We see clients that love having, you know, two homes, two different places to be, two different communities, and others that two is just too much of a burden.
Right. And again, it depends on location, everything. My folks were very fortunate after working their entire lives. They bought a little cabin up on a lake in Wisconsin. And it wasn't only seen for them as a cool place for them to go, but as like a legacy thing for our entire family.
Right.
It can be something really magical you have that you can pass on to your kids. I will just say that's where also Mesereau comes into play. Estate planning. How is that going to happen, right?
Right. Exactly. And I think that's one of the biggest things that brings joy to our clients is if they have a second home that the family congregates at. That's invaluable, right? To have the whole family together. But again, a second home is part of an estate plan. It's something to consider. How do you pass it on? How do you title it so it passes on smoothly to the next generation? All those things are things we talk to clients about.
Noah, anything else you want to add about this renting versus buying debate? You haven't settled it entirely, which I guess is probably the point, right?
I think that is the point. I think there's no real, you know, winner outright. It's each person's, you know, individual scenario. I will say in today's market, you know, we're seeing not a lot of supply. So not a lot of people are selling, which is making it really tough on buying. A lot of pressure, a lot of bidding wars, a lot of, you know, people going over asking. So again, not saying one way or the other, but I think it is a tough market to be buying in right now.
Although I will say, 4 or 5 years ago, some people were saying similar things.
Absolutely.
And now prices are up 25-30% in some areas.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which is, you know, kind of crazy if you think about it.
Yes.
With where interest rates are and the cost to buy a home being the interest rate, it's, you know,
it's a little wild.
It is a little wild.
Exactly. Well, no matter what decision you make, it can be the right one for you financially. And I think that's the most important decision to make.
Absolutely.
You've got to make not only the important decision that you want for what you want for your family and the joy and all that of maybe buying versus renting. You have to make the smart fiscal decision for yourself so you're not handcuffed down the road.
Right. And it's a big one, right? It should be something that you take time on, you think through, you talk to somebody, hopefully Mesereau, and you know, you make sure you're making the right decision.
Noah Block, you've done renting versus buying well all month long. We appreciate it, my friend.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
1-877-MESIROW, MESIROW.com. Want to live well? Then you need to plan well. A Mesereau advisor can help you create a financial plan that fits your life. Call Mesereau at 877-MESIROW.